Welcome back to another episode of Navigating Postpartum with me, Jeree Williams. But as you know, you might see this video on YouTube under I Didn't Know Postpartum Edition because I have another postpartum coach on with me today. We have Amy. So everybody say, hey, Amy. I know that she won't hear you, but she'll appreciate it. So Amy, introduce yourself to the people.
Hey, hi, my name is Amy. I live in southeastern Pennsylvania. I'm a mom of three. I'm a pre and postnatal coach and holistic nutritionist. And basically, I help pregnant women transition into postpartum.
Ooh, you do a lot. Yes, you do a lot. What made you go and begin your journey on this postpartum coach?
Back in 2018, I got my holistic nutrition certification. But then when I was having my third baby in 2021, I realized how much research I had done myself. And I was just thinking, like, nobody told me this stuff. And I don't think people are telling the people that come after me. So what better way to share, you know, to help people that come after me than to share what I learned and all the research and all the hours I've spent listening and reading, you know? So I just kind of wanted to help people after me have an easier time.
Yes. And then let's get into it. What are these things that you're like, I wish somebody would have told me postpartum edition?
So, okay, we're going to get into the nitty gritty pretty quickly here. So the first thing I think of is we bleed postpartum, right? After we have our babies, there's things that come out, the rest of like the uterine tissue, the blood, the mucus. It's called lochia. And we're not even told, like, how long is this supposed to happen? So basically, I'm just going to tell you kind of averages, but for the first 3 days, it's like a really heavy period. And then on average, it's about a regular period for about 2 weeks. Most women resolve their bleeding between around the 6 and 8 week mark, but we're all different. So I do want to have that as a little bit of a disclaimer that there's averages, but just because you have a little bit shorter time or a little bit longer time doesn't mean you're wrong. There's anything wrong with you. But I would say if you're still bleeding at 12 weeks, then you might want to ask for another appointment.
Oh, I have a question. So yeah. I know you mentioned the bleeding. So when you were having your children, did you have a midwife or did you have an OB?
I had an OB. So I was in a hospital for all three of mine.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was wondering too, because I know for sometimes everyone gets like different experiences with providers as well, because that just made me think too, because I had a midwife, I kind of had a little bit more information, like when it came to like postpartum recovery, which was really cool, but then not everyone experiences that. So this is why it's so amazing to have these conversations. But yeah, so what else do you think people should know about?
Well, I just want to piggyback off what you just said in that, yes, we have such different experiences. And if you've had a doula or a midwife, a little bit, maybe more on the holistic side of things, you've probably been a little bit more informed, or maybe you've taken a class ahead of giving birth or something. But a lot of times in the conventional model of Western medicine, we don't get a lot of that education. So there's the bleeding part. And then kind of associated with that, after we give birth, and you can educate me on this too, having a midwife, the fundal massage. So after we have a baby, whoever our provider is likely to do a little massage kind of on the top of our belly, pushing down. And what it does is try to expel the rest of that lochia, and it tries to trigger uterine contractions that help the uterus shrink back to its prior size and just kind of help push along the healing process. And nobody tells you about that when you give birth in the hospital. They just start doing it and it hurts. So do they do that in a more holistic setting?
So I had a midwife, but I had both birth experiences at the hospital, but they did do that. So yes, they do come in there and they're like pressing down. But for me, I'm always like, so what are you doing? What is this for? Like I asked, yeah, I know they're probably tired of me because I'm like, I'm asking questions. You're not just about to come up here and touch me.
I know. And the good thing is like they did, you know, ask my permission, but I do think that it's probably a variety of experiences out there. And maybe some people just come in and say, I'm going to do this, but then they just start doing it. So it is good to kind of educate ourselves on what to expect, because they should be telling you anything that they're doing to your body, especially if they're touching you, but it's also good to know ahead of time.
Yeah, because I think that's so important. So this also goes back to the factor of making sure that you advocate for yourself, asking those questions. Think about, there's this acronym that they call BRAIN, and we could talk about more of that in the other episodes about BRAIN, but it's so important to just have those aspects of like knowing what are the best methods, what are the outcomes that can come from it, is it beneficial, is it going to make it worse, or is it going to help it make it better, like those aspects as well. So I think that's really important to actually help as well.
For sure. So the next thing I was going to mention is night sweats. So this actually is more common in subsequent births compared with first time births, maybe because of just the ramping up of hormones. But as our hormones adjust after birth, some women experience bouts of sweating, particularly through the night. And this might mean that you're waking up kind of like soaking wet, even having to change your clothes because you're sweating. And it peaks typically around 2 weeks postpartum. And some tips I have about that is just making sure you're staying hydrated. And for me, it actually helped to wear like a wicking shirt to bed, like one of those kind of workout shirts, because it kind of kept the moisture away from my body and made it a little less uncomfortable if I was waking up. But I did have to change my clothes in the night sometimes.
Yes, I remember those night sweats, and they just come out of nowhere. It's like, I'm hot. And next thing you know, you're sweating. And if the baby's sleeping on you as well, like not like just laying on you during that time, it's just, you're going to be hot. So make sure.
Now, do you remember if it was worse with your first or second, or if it was the same?
To be honest, I don't remember.
I feel like, on one hand, I don't remember, but then on another hand, I'm like, I feel like it really stuck in my mind in my second and my third. So maybe it wasn't as much of an issue with my first.
Yeah, because I'm over here like trying to think back, but it's like, you know how you still have that fog? Like I'm still in my postpartum state, I still have fog right now. So this is like, I can't remember certain things right now, but hopefully.
And also our brains romanticize it and like forget it on purpose. I think it's like an ancestral thing or something where it's like, you're going to forget all this bad stuff because we want you to have more babies.
Yep. That's really where I'm at. Like, I don't remember it, but like, I still remember certain things, but I'm just like, I don't know. And it's crazy because the brain, that's a whole nother conversation, but like your brain, just like the brain is just so amazing how it can change yours. Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And this is why when I first started creating my program, I did it while I was on my maternity leave with my third baby, because I thought, I am not going to remember this stuff if I don't write it down now. And so anyone who's had a baby is like, oh, that's right, when they hear my stuff. But otherwise, I don't know if I would have known to tell all of these specific tips if I hadn't been like, yep, people need to know this in real time.
Yes. And then one thing too, I think one of the biggest ones I was talking about this week on Threads is about like sleep deprivation. Like, people don't tell you how hard it is to function on a lack of sleep. And I know sometimes we try to glamorize it like, oh, you know, you'll be okay. It's okay to be tired. But it's like, no, like I think I read somewhere it's like it's worse than like driving drunk, because like your body is just not functioning the right way. And mamas who are in the midst of sleep deprivation, please just take time to rest. That's one of the biggest things. Amy, do you have anything to add about this sleep deprivation?
Yes, because this is one of those things that, yeah, they do tell you, but it's not actually like helpful necessarily when people are like, well, you're never going to sleep again. That's not the most helpful thing. But what I try to tell people is maybe just general sleep hygiene tips, because if we can increase the quantity of our sleep, maybe we can improve its quality. So something like, I know this is a hard one, but maybe stopping screen time maybe an hour before we go to bed, like stopping looking at our phone right before we go to bed, because that blue light kind of keeps us awake. I know they say sleep when the baby sleeps. I don't love that tip, but I do like the tip of try to get sleep during your baby's longest stretch. So typically when we put our babies down at night, they have one long stretch and then they wake up and maybe have shorter stretches after that. So if we can go to bed when they first go to bed at night, even if that means delaying their bedtime until we want to go to bed, then we might be able to get a good stretch in. A couple other things are watching our sugar intake, because when we have too much sugar, our blood sugar kind of rises and crashes in the night, and that can wake us up. Using amber nightlights, or even just nightlights in general, versus turning on the light if you need to go somewhere.
That is a great tip. I actually have one of those lights, and I love that you mentioned sleep with the baby's longest stretch. I had to tell you that, because I'm in a season like my youngest is 8 months, and his longest stretch is like between like 9 and 12. Like, he's still, you know, babies, each baby's different, but he'll still wake up. So now I have to make it a thing of like, my husband puts the toddler to sleep so I can go to sleep during that stretch, because it's so needed. Because I'm like, if I try to do other things during that time, and then once I try to fall asleep, he's waking up, and then I'm just like, And even I'm like in a bad state of mind because I'm like, I'm tired. You won't go to sleep. So I love that you even mentioned that. And that is an amazing tip. I never thought of to have that tip because I just naturally figured it out. But I
Yeah.
love that you did that.
And for those who can't do that, I don't know if you've heard of dream feeding, but say your baby goes to bed at 6 p.m. and that's their normal bedtime, but you don't go to bed till 9. You can, especially if you're breastfeeding, go in and feed them, even just pick them up out of their crib while they're sleeping and feed them. They probably will latch on. And then you'll kind of empty right before you go to bed and they'll kind of have a top off and then they're less likely to wake up as quickly. That doesn't work for everyone, but for those who it works, it's an awesome tip.
Yeah, I try to do that. Like if I do stay up late and I'm like, yeah, this is like the time he's gonna wake up. I'm like, oh, well, let me feed you before I go to sleep. Cause sometimes I like try to stay up to hang out with my husband, but then I'm just like, yeah, I have to be responsible in this moment to go to sleep.
It's hard because once they go to bed, we kind of want our me time or our time with our partner. And that does make it hard, which is why I think for at least one of my babies, dream feeding worked well, but every baby's different.
Yes, most definitely. And that's why me, because I'm naturally a morning person, I try to wake up earlier for my alone time because I'm like, once the baby wakes up, once the toddler wakes up, it's on and popping. So I don't know if that's something that you can relate to, like waking up early. If not, I understand because that's a commitment.
I think that it depends on like, are we a morning person or a night person, you know? So everyone has to figure out for themselves, like what works for them. I am a morning person, but I can't bring myself to wake up before the kids, but I do like that tip. And for some people they find, oh, I can make my coffee. I can have some time. I can journal. I know you do your Bible study in the morning. Like that is a great time to like, just get your mind right and start the day right. So I do love the tip. I just don't do it.
Yes. And also one thing I would add too to that is sometimes like just because you wake up early before the kids doesn't necessarily mean you have to get up out the bed and start your day as well. Because for me, I like to have it as a slow time. Like that's when I'm like, okay, well, whatever I need when I wake up, I can have it to the side of the bed. Or I use my phone. Sometimes I'm guilty of that with my Bible because I'm like, well, it's easier instead of trying to open my Bible with this big light waking up the children. But also too, like just use that time for a slow morning to just like really get your mind ready. You don't have to necessarily always have to get up, go work out and do things. Just, you know, just rest. Or if you can get some extra sleep, do that as well.
Right. And like, that's a good point because you can do a little meditation in bed too, or even just do a mental checklist, which is kind of like a little self check-in. Like, okay, what do I have to get done today? You know, how can I set my intentions?
How am I feeling? What's my energy level? Like, it's a lot of things that can come into factor, like just checking in with yourself before the day starts as well. So I really love that aspect.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then do you have any other tips that you would add? Like what moms should have known about?
So let me check my list here because
those are great ones, you guys. She had, let me know if I missed something, but I know I heard the night sweats, the sleep deprivation, the bleeding can last longer than you actually thought. Like you're like, oh, they said 6 weeks. And if you're still bleeding a little bit after that, like the 8 week mark, that's okay. If, you know, everybody.
One thing that I didn't know that I think a lot of moms kind of blame themselves for is something called stress incontinence, which is like little bit leaking of urine when you are exerting yourself. So even if you're either jumping, walking, I mean, it can be anything. It can be lifting your baby, it can be lifting the heavy carrier. But after we have a baby, you know, those muscles down there are weak.
Yes.
And we do, this is another reason why we just need to let ourselves heal, because if we don't give ourselves adequate time to heal, those muscles are going to take even longer to repair themselves. And a result of that can be you're leaking urine. Now, in the very beginning, that's extremely normal. But as we get further and further out of postpartum, it's common, but it's not necessarily normal. So if this is something that you're struggling with, like that would be a reason to maybe seek out a pelvic floor specialist, somebody to do, help you do pelvic floor rehab, or I know there's online programs for it. Sometimes personal trainers have special certifications in that as well. So know that you don't have to live with some of these symptoms if they're ongoing, like there are things you can do about them because you're worth it.
And you know which one I would add to that I wish I would have known about? I don't know if I say it properly, but diastasis recti, that is someone that women should know more about, because oftentimes you'll think, oh, you're like, my belly is still going down. But in the fact, it's like your abs have to reform. And I had to, on my own, I had to look it up. But then I was like, well, there are people out here that can help you put your abs together.
Pelvic floor specialists can also help with that. So the diastasis recti, there's a couple different ways to pronounce it, but I don't think any are wrong. Your abdominal muscles separate while you're pregnant. It's very normal for that to happen. And then after you have the baby, the abdominal muscles come back together in the middle and they heal themselves for most people. However, for some, that diastasis, that opening persists. And the way that you can self-assess is, even if you're just standing there and you lean back, or if you're laying on the ground and you do a crunch, if your belly domes in the middle or kind of cones and looks like a triangle, that probably means you have a diastasis. And yes, pelvic floor specialists can help with that too, because all of those muscles are interconnected. Those abs being able to close in the front helps support your intra-abdominal pressure, and it's all coordinated. So if something is dysfunctional in one area, it's probably going to be dysfunctional in another area.
Yes, I love that you talked about this, guys. I know that we usually don't talk about things like this during these podcasts, but this is so informal. And I know for me, I wish I would have known about some of these things. So if you are a new mom or you know a new mom, please share this podcast with her. And also, Amy, how can we get in touch with you?
So I am on all the socials at Eat What Feels Good. I'm on TikTok, Threads, Instagram. Yeah, so you can find me there.
Yes, and y'all know I just said informal. I meant informational. Y'all know my mom.
You know, we got a little medical there, and it's okay. I mean, it's hard because I want to help women with also like the mental health piece, but I do think that preparing them with these practical tips is going to, in the end, positively impact their mental health, because they'll feel prepared. They'll feel more in control and empowered in their postpartum experience. And it's all connected.
Yes. So you guys know I'm all on the side of like the mental health aspect and making sure that you're taking care of yourself. But there are other postpartum coaches that can help you in the other aspects as well. Don't think it's a one size fits all. That's why we have a community and a village of women to support us and cheer us on. And with that said, I want to thank you so much for this amazing episode. As you know, if you want to see me and Amy in real time, go watch this on YouTube. We're going to have a great time. I want to do this again, and I'm looking forward to more. You guys let me know what you think, and until next time.